is the weekly show all about weather, the greatest weather podcast in the universe, simply because it's the only weather podcast in the universe. This is Weather Brains, and we're glad you're here. This is episode number 368 for the 11th of February, 2013. James Spann here, and I'm really pumped about this show. I've decided this might be the greatest show we've ever done. 368 is going to be number one because I'm excited about our guest. The guest, the guy we get to interview, is one of our own. We've been meaning to do this for years and years and years, and we're going to do it tonight. This is just going to be fantastic. So we do have Brian Peters, the internationally beloved meteorologist, who is standing by. What kind of headphones? You got some Dr. Dre headphones there? What kind of headphones you got there?
No, they're just standard Bose headphones.
What those sent you back?
I don't know. They're old. They're coming apart too.
Those Bose headphones sent you back what, $300 or what?
No, this is the cheap ones. But they're old. But the headphone part's coming apart. Actually, James, I'm searching out ARC plans. We've had so much rain here. I've topped over 3 inches so far, which is not the highest around here by any stretch of the imagination. But certainly with another 1 to 2 inches possible, I think ARC plans might be a good investment right now.
Yeah, it's been awfully wet across the southeast United States, and we'll talk. We've had a lot of weather going on here. We had a major blizzard up in the northeast, and we'll talk about that. We've had a major tornado here in the last few days in southeastern Mississippi, and we'll talk about that. A lot to talk about, but let's bring in Kevin Selle, who is dressed like he's going to a funeral or something.
A funeral. What is the obsession with my clothes? Last week you were asking me about my turtleneck, and now this is a simple fleece jacket.
I thought you were wearing some dark suit. I see now it's a nice little fleece thing.
Fleece jacket. Yeah, the guy that works before me, there's the air conditioning in here has two settings. It's off or Antarctica.
On.
Yeah. and he leaves quite a bit before me, and he left it on. So it was like 4 degrees in here when I came, and it takes a long time to warm up. And so there you have it. But enough of that. Now, you know, I have a bone to pick with you. I was watching, I had a few minutes to kill, and I thought, you know, I usually don't get in here until right before we start the program, and you guys are here fooling around for the pre-show for 20 minutes or whatever. So I watched last week's pre-show, and all of a sudden I hear, well, Kevin never sent any audio for the email like Nate does. And well, I'm thinking, excuse me. Now, wait just a second. First of all, not only have I sent audio when I'm not here for the email, but one time I had Matthew do the email via audio, which was obviously not important enough for you to remember. So thank you very much for that.
That was Matthew and not you.
I did it, and I had Matthew do it. So until Nate's daughter does it, you know, just stay off my back. How old is your daughter, Nate?
I'm keeping my daughter as far away from this group of people as I possibly can.
Very good. Very good. How old is she now? She's like 2, yes? She's
2 and 2 and a quarter. She'll be 2 and a half in March.
All right, we're waiting.
2 and a half going on 16.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my bone to pick. Oh, and I listened to, you mentioned Reed being on Reed Timmer's show. Highly recommend that to all of our listeners. Go search for what's the show called? Never Stop Chasing.
I believe that's correct. Yes.
Yeah. So search for Reed. It was a good episode. It was what, 2 or 3 weeks ago. It was really interesting. I mean, I know most of the stuff about you. It was interesting to hear about Reed, but I enjoyed the interview. You guys talked a lot of stuff. He's an interesting guy. We need to have him come back and not talk, chasing. I just thought it was really interesting to listen. You know, he gets a lot of static for being so amped up, so hyped up on chasing and on the shows that he's been on. And it's interesting to listen to him talk about that. You almost sense that he kind of feels in some ways a little guilty about that. Did you sense that, James?
Yes. And,
yeah, it was interesting.
And I, you know, he said he's kind of an introvert. He's very quiet, and he had very few friends, and he's just kind of coming out of his shell now, which I can relate to. I used to be like that. Right. Hey, JB, if you can mute your mic, I think you're typing or doing something. If you can mute, once we bring on JB, we'll unmute. I think JB's over there writing down his grocery list or something right by his microphone.
Anyway, I recommend that program, and I'll stop talking.
All right. So, Nate, you were absent, but you were kind and courteous and submitted the email segment via recorded audio file last week, which was marvelous.
But
we've never had that happen on this show before.
You know, I would not want to, lose my position due to dereliction of duty or other things. So,
It was excellent. So, all right. But before we bring in Bill Murray, who's going to bring in our special guest, who happens to be one of us. So did you guys hear some of this Bill Nye stuff going on?
I only saw one thing go by. What were the details?
Well, first off, they had this CNN interview. And listen to what the CNN lady says. I mean, this is nuts. Listen to her question. Listen real carefully.
Our science guy, Bill Nye, and, you know, talk about something else that's falling from the sky. And that is an asteroid. What's coming our way? Is this an effect of perhaps global warming, or is this just some meteoric occasion?
So it is stooped to this.
Add that to the list of things global warming causes.
Asteroid.
Wow.
An asteroid.
What network was that on?
This is CNN, the cable news network. So this CNN lady asked Bill Nye, the science guy, is the asteroid caused by global warming?
And his appearance on MSNBC was even worse.
Yeah, it goes downhill. So this is from MSNBC.
This is the second monster storm that slammed into the Northeast this season. It follows, of course, in the wake of Superstorm Sandy, and it's left the entire quarter one big soggy mess. Joining me now to try to make sense of some of this, Bill Nye, the science guy. Bill, always good to see you.
Good to see you. Good afternoon.
The storm today on a similar trajectory to the path recently taken by Superstorm Sandy. I want to show these images here. Very similar images of the two paths. What's behind these massive storm systems in this particular part of the country?
Well, this particular part of the world. So you get storms that start in off the coast of Africa, and they make their way across the Atlantic Ocean, and the nature of the spin of the Earth and the pull of gravity makes these things get a little bit of pressure behind them, and it pushes them northward.
And
the thing is, and as you observed, both Sandy and both the rainstorm and the snowstorm follow the same track. It's not a coincidence. And so when you're there, you may notice that the wind generally comes from the northeast. And people in New England are to a nor'easter, right?
Oh, he gets there.
When you
live
on the west coast, I'm sitting right now in Los Angeles, that same type of storm is called a sou'wester. And so if you go to the sailboat store, you can get a nor'easter hat in New England, but it's a sou'wester hat in Seattle. And so this is because the storm has a counterclockwise motion. It's a low-pressure system in the northern hemisphere. And it really is extraordinary, everybody, that the storm is so big. How big is it? It's so big that the difference in spin at the southern part of the storm versus the northern part of the storm causes it to the spin of the Earth.
Okay.
Causes the storm
about?
To spin. And here we are. Now, this could be the future, everybody. This could be the new normal. With all the extra heat energy that's in the atmosphere, climate change, this could be the way it's going to be a lot.
Now, people. All right. It just
right.
goes.
As a guy who I liked his show, I'm a Bill Nye fan. However, just like a good horse, at some point you just have to shoot it. Because
amen.
I got halfway through that interview, and I honestly felt bad. I really felt bad for him because I know he's a smart guy. But that was just...
That was painful.
Oh, it was. I feel for the guy. I really do.
So, you know, Jason's same now. We've had him on the show. He writes... he's one of the writers for the Capital Weather Gang. And for
those that are,
Salmonow, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Salmonow.
So, you know, we got, for those watching, you can see it, but his, he goes through everything he said that just didn't make any sense.
Oh, did he break it down?
Yeah, number one, you know, Nye implied that both Sandy and the blizzard came from Africa, and in both cases, he's dead wrong. Sandy was not an African wave. It formed in the Caribbean, and the blizzard, as we all know on this show, those were the result of these two mid-latitude systems that phased, which has nothing to do with anything off the coast of Africa. And then, you know, he goes into this bizarre comparison between East Coast storms and West Coast storms and sou'westers. And it just goes downhill from there. But go to the Capital Weather Gang and read that. But, you know, I got lambasted, you know, by some of these political media people when I called. And I will be the first to admit, I called him a stooge on Twitter. But because, you know, anytime there's anything, what they do, they trot this guy out, you know, whether it's a flood, a tornado, a hurricane, a nor'easter.
Or the theoretical physicist from MIT. Yeah. His name.
Yeah. So, you know, and look, it works on both ways. The MSNBC does it on the left side. Fox News does it on the right side. It's all about their political ideology. That's who they get on there. But they trot this guy out. And whatever happens, you know, if a dog poots, he's going to come on there and say that it's, you know, global warming. And so he came. I don't even know what he blamed on it. But I said, somebody needs to teach this guy the difference between weather and climate. You know, forget the climate, man-made climate change art. Just forget that. You know, this guy's just going to blame every little weather event that happens on that. And I'm going to stop before I get in trouble. But I think we've all learned our lesson that you just can't trot some guy on some national cable channel to be a weather expert where this guy has zero formal education in atmospheric science. He's a mechanical engineer. And, you know, like Nate says, I'm sure he's a smart guy, but he has no qualifications to be talking about weather or climate, but they trot him out there because he matches the worldview of the cable channel. And again, it works the other way. It works on the right-wing channels. So to me, that was just an embarrassment. But here's the deal. Tell him what you know, and don't tell him what you don't know. Somebody gave me that advice years and years ago that has kept me out of trouble, and if Nye would listen to that, he would not go down these bad roads and talk about things he doesn't understand.
Speaking of Bill Mack, wasn't he a late-night DJ at WBAP?
This is Bill Nye, the science guy, JB. Wrong guy. Bill Nye.
I'll take back my question.
But I'm just telling you, you know, I got lambasted by these people for even suggesting that this guy might not know what he's talking about. And I guarantee you, they're still going to defend him. The worldview guys will come in there and defend him to the day they die. They will never, ever admit this guy's wrong. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And again, it works both ways. But please don't go down a path where you're talking about something you don't understand. Now that I've done my Bill Nye rant, let's go to Bill Murray, who's going to introduce our special guest.
When can we have Al Gore as a guest?
The second that Heidi Cohen shows up, JB. Well, I'm glad I had lunch with you today, James, because they may not let you in Cracker Barrel tomorrow after you call Bill Nye too. Yeah, James, tonight's guest weather brain is a homegrown talent. He's from Havana Junction here in Alabama, down in Hale County. We welcome the great J.B. Elliott as our guest weather brain. J.B., do you ever think you'd be doing this this side of the hot seat?
I don't know how it's going to turn out either.
Yeah, I'd be scared too if I were you, JB.
No, I'm not dreading it. I'm anxious to try this.
JB, we're going to harass you this year until you write that book of yours, Scatter Brains and Scatter Showers. So tonight's going to be your opportunity to practice on that. So
okay.
why don't you tell the audience, JB, how you got into weather many, many years ago.
I was born with weather in my blood, I believe, and even when I was... eight or nine years old, my mom was in Tuscaloosa one day shopping, and she bought me a 5-cent composition book and a 29-cent thermometer from S&H Kress, brought it home and gave it to me, and I just went crazy. I started keeping hourly records.
Now, Jimmy, you don't have any of those records still in your archive in your garage out there in Trussell, do you?
I hope I don't.
You got a lot of other stuff, though, JB, that's for sure. Now, you were born just a few weeks after a pretty big weather event in Alabama. Why don't you tell us about that? Do you think it imprinted anything on your soul?
I think it damaged my soul. But I was born on April 17, 1932, and the big super outbreak was, what, April 21, 1932?
Yeah, March 21st, that's right.
Yeah.
Hey, JB, I'm gonna ask you one favor. A lot of people are watching, so just look at that camera while you're talking so people can see that baby face you got there.
Okay. April 21, 1932 is when the super outbreak was, and I believe until this day that since I was born on April 17, 1932, I heard that tremendous loud thunder while I was still in my mom's womb, and it made me want to be a weatherman.
Now, JB, you had a lot of a teacher, or at least one special teacher, that really influenced your interest in weather, right?
Yeah, his name was W.W. Duncan, and he was my science teacher at Martin Stewart Elementary School, and then he went on over to Akron High School, and I did too. And he gave me the assignment every Wednesday during Current Events Day. We had Current Events Day, and on Wednesday we had to bring clippings from a newspaper if we wanted to report to the class, but he specifically assigned me to bring the class up to date on the new developments in weather forecasting and also a weather resume.
Yeah, JB, back in those days, you used to hang around with the old guys on the square in Havana Junction or Manville, didn't you? Did they have any stories to tell you about the weather down in Hellcount?
Yeah, they learned me to be a forecaster. They were farmers with those big straw hats on, and they gathered around the table with dominoes, and the domino board was put on some Coca-Cola cans because they didn't have a table to play on. And I sat there for hours and listened to them. And they insisted that thunderstorms in the summertime followed the Black Warrior River up through Hale County all the way up to Tuscaloosa, and that the most of the big thunderstorms would pass west of Mountville and west of Akron, west of Havana Junction, and go right into Tuscaloosa.
Did you find out that they were correct, JB?
I sort of sensed it, yeah. I tried to watch it after that, and I believe they're correct.
And for those listening, this is in the western part of the state of Alabama. JB is from rural West Alabama, so...
Rural.
Now, JB, is that where you learn how to pick cotton naked?
Cotton, you were the title.
That's the show title right there.
You've heard that on the show a few times, but seriously, I guess, JB, that interest in weather stayed with you. Do you move to Birmingham? How'd you become a cooperative observer?
Some folks in Moundville that were distant kin to me got me a job at Elliott Wholesale Grocery Company in Bessemer. It was a wholesale grocery company. I worked there for a number of years. And they lived in Norwood. And what was your question, Bill?
Yeah, how'd you get to start being a cooperative observer?
I started going out to Birmingham Airport on Saturday mornings like Bill Murray did to the weather office on West Oxmoor Road on Saturday mornings. And Charles F. Bradley was the official in charge. They weren't called MICs then. And he saw that I was extremely interested in weather. And I would hang around out there all day. I would even help him file paper. And sometimes if they would let me, I would answer the phone. But he kept on, and he sensed that I wanted a job. So he appealed to the regional office in Fort Worth to let me come on the station as a trainee and get trained on the station and be a member of the U.S. Weather Bureau. But they said, no, 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 no. And they said the only time that he could be accepted at all is when the Federal Register is totally empty of any veterans. And, of course, I agreed with that. So it was 5 or 6 years before one day the Federal Register was empty. And so they called Mr. Bradley and said, if you want to get Mr. Elliott, this is the time to do it. The only thing was me and my two cousins were en route to Denver and New Mexico and all places out west. And so my mom had to call my folks in Denver where we were staying and tell me that she had to mail the application papers there, and I had to find a doctor that give me a physical. And so we looked up in the Denver phone book for a doctor who could give a physical for future federal employees, and he was out at the Denver airport. So we all went out there early one morning and told him we wanted to him to give us a physical for federal employment, and he says, "I'm a dentist." And I said, well, we're from Birmingham, and I don't know where else to find anybody. He said, well, come on back here. And he took me in the back room with those little rubber hammers and beat me on the knee and see how my reactions were, and took my temperature and looked in my eyes, cleaned out my earwax, and said, I'm going to approve you. And he signed the form.
That sounds like a Three Stooges movie. Hey, what year was this, JB? I mean, so you got into the U.S. Weather Bureau in what year?
I think it was 1957.
Wow. See, this is the reason we've been meaning to do that. You know, I was talking to Bill at lunch today. We've got to talk with JB because this guy has been working for the Weather Service since the 50s, and there aren't that many left. And I got 10 million questions, Bill, but you go ahead.
Yeah, you can throw them in whenever you're ready, James. But, JB, tell us about your first day. Your first day was kind of interesting. You almost didn't get paid, did you?
Wait, go back a little. How did you get the job?
Well, Fort Worth approved it after that doctor said okay. And so they let me come on the station, and I could not be allowed to work alone for a full year. That there have to be somebody on the station with me. And so that's the way that happened. And I appeared for duty on the morning at 8 o'clock, and there was a tornado on the ground north of Jasper, about 30 miles northwest of Birmingham, and three people were killed. And that's the way I was really got the feel about what it's like to be a weather guy. So I helped them out all day. I answered the phone all day. We had to answer all the phones personally. Didn't have any phone recorders in those days, and the phone rang unstoppingly all day long. I bet I answered the phone 80 days on that first day, and I wasn't even an employee yet. I had not been fingerprinted or final approval or anything.
So JB, you know, today we take for granted all this computer equipment and radar equipment that we have at our fingertips, and it was quite different for you, and you were sort of a pioneer in using radar data to give short-term information to the local area on the wire circuit in Birmingham, right?
Yeah, I didn't even know I was making a hit that night. We had some severe thunderstorms west of Birmingham producing golf ball size hail, and I was writing statements for the weather wire that only went to one TV station and one newspaper. It wasn't a statewide weather wire. They had sending out stories on that and sort of sending out warnings. And I got the idea to get a piece of onion skin paper and go upstairs to the control tower. And I went in, and their radar equipment to track airplanes was in the back of the control tower. And you had to crawl to get in there because you couldn't even stand up back there. And I asked them, could I trace the radar scope with this onion skin paper? And I did that about eight times that night and took the onion skin paper back downstairs and wrote a weather statement based on that onion skin paper. And some high-ranking guy in Washington, D.C. saw those statements coming across the teletype that night, and he called the chief to show them to him, and the chief was so impressed, he sent them to the regional office in Fort Worth, and they were so impressed that they mailed them back to Mr. Bradley in Birmingham and highly recommended me to be a full-time employee.
Yeah, there was a man, JB, that was sort of your sidekick, Jay Shelley.
Yeah.
You guys were an amazing pair. And why don't you talk about some of those pioneering days and severe weather warnings back when, the rules weren't written yet.
Right. We were absolutely forbidden to mention the word tornado, even talking to people or even in a weather summary or on the air or on the telephone or anything. That the tornado was a bad word.
Now, wait. How long did that rule stay in effect, JB? I mean, when did it change?
It gradually changed in about 7 or 8 or 9 years, I believe. And we used to have, in those days, we had a district office of the Weather Service, and our district office was in New Orleans. They were boss over us. And if they thought that weather conditions were possibly strong enough to cause some severe thunderstorms or even a tornado, they would send us a telegram, and the Western Union guy would drive all the way out to the airport from downtown Western Union office to deliver that telegram that says conditions are possible for some severe thunderstorms this afternoon.
Wow. So you could not even say the word tornado until the mid-60s or so then.
I said it when I was in the bathroom by myself.
Show title, In the Bathroom by Myself, Weather Brains 368.
JB, you got in trouble with a forecaster in Atlanta one day over some showers near Anniston, didn't you?
Serious trouble. That's when our district office was switched from New Orleans to Atlanta, and the forecast for Birmingham and vicinity in zones 1, 2, 3, and 4. That was, number one is Northwest Alabama, number two is Northeast Alabama, number three is East Central Alabama, and number four is Tuscaloosa. And so it had been raining all morning over there, and we didn't have a drop of rain in the forecast, and I wanted to amend the forecast, but I could not do it without getting permission from Atlanta. So I called the forecast in Atlanta, and I said, I would like to update the zone 4 forecast to put some rain in there. He said, what rain? I said, that rain. And I said, it's been raining at Anniston all morning. And he said, there's nobody lives over at that mountain at Anniston. I said, yes, there are about 30,000 people. He said, well, I'm not going to give you permission to. I think you're just making a name for yourself or trying to make a name for yourself. How old are you? I said, I'm 14. That made me very mad, but I told him my true age was 27, I believe, at the time. He said, if you amend that forecast, I am not going to give you permission, so leave my name off of it, and I think you're doing the wrong thing. So when the noon sequence came in, 37 hundredths of an inch in the last few hours at Anniston Airport.
There you go. So you were vindicated, JB.
Yes, sir.
And you did make a name for yourself, JB, on the NOAA Weather Radio. You became a legend in Central Alabama when we got Weather Radio in late 1976. Why don't you talk about that experience?
Hey, Bill, hang on a second now. Let's do this in chronological order. I want to go back to the early days before we get to Weather Radio. Do you mind if I ask one early day question?
No, go ahead.
Now, this is going to be the highlight of the show. If you've not heard this, this is the greatest. This is the greatest story you'll ever hear. Okay, so JB, I want you to share the Miss Kitty story. Go.
The Miss Kitty story was years later when our weather office was over on 11 West Oxmoor Road, I believe. Anyway, I was a photographer too. I had a photography license in all those years, and I was the official photographer for Animal Tracks magazine, which was the main magazine for the Birmingham Zoo and or the animals. And Miss Kitty, who is Amanda Blake, she.
And again, for those people that don't know, that there was a show on television years and years and years ago called Gunsmoke. And she was a big, big television star back in the 50s and 60s. So that's who Miss Kitty is. It was a character on Gunsmoke. You go Google Gunsmoke and Miss Kitty, and you'll find out who it is. So go ahead, JB.
She's still pretty, but I think she's dead.
Show title.
We've had a fountain of show titles here. This is awesome. She's still pretty, but she's dead.
Miss Kitty's aunt had an aunt that lived in Homewood, which is a Birmingham suburb, and her aunt was very interested in the Z2 and the Zoological Society. So Miss Kitty came to Birmingham several times a year to visit with her, and she would always show up at the zoo. And the zoo happened to have a new orangutan, a little baby orangutan that had been born recently. And the editor of the I wish I had some Buffalo Rock or something.
He's going to need a stiff drink after this. Go ahead, JB. So
anyway, the editor of the magazine, this was called Animal Tracks, was a good friend of ours, and she approached me to be the official photographer. So she called me and said, I want you to be sure and show up at the zoo this morning because this kid is going to be there, and she wants to visit in the cage with a little new orangutan. And so I did, and I had a banana in my hand as I went down the side of the cages where everything was, and that little orangutan, I didn't even see him, but he went over, he came flying across that cage and held on to the bars and reached his paw through there and took my banana out of my mouth.
Well, the story gets better now. We're just getting into the good part. Yeah.
I started to go home and get me another banana. Anyway,
so you were in the Birmingham Zoo with a banana, and this orangutan reached through the bars and grabbed your banana
and ate it in two bites.
Okay.
Anyway, Miss Kitty, they brought Miss Kitty out there, and she got into the cage with the little orangutan, and I was supposed to take some pictures of the orangutan sitting on her shoulder or her holding the orangutan or something, which I did. I took several. The only thing is, the orangutan fell deeply in love with Miss Kitty.
So that's what they're calling it these days.
And he climbed up on the back of her lap and put his paws over her shoulder and was fondling the place he had no business. I took one picture of him doing that, but we never did put it in the magazine.
So the question is, do you still have that photograph of this orangutan sexually molesting Miss Kitty?
I don't know, but I do have a photograph of him on the cover of the magazine, of him hanging onto her back, and they were hugging next.
What magazine was this again, JB?
Animal Tracks.
Animal Tracks. Is it still in print? Do you know?
I think it is, but I'm no longer associated with the Birmingham Zoological Society. But I've got about 15 copies of the ones I did photography for. I've got the copy that shows her. Mm. I might need to put that on WeatherBrains, or no, I might need to put that on the blog.
You ought to just hold it up for your camera so we can see it. But I will say this, Miss Kitty, when I promise we're going to get back on weather. We're going to sidetrack and go into these rat hole stories. Miss Kitty was born in 1929. She died in August of 89, right as you retired from the Weather Service, JB.
Yeah, that's when I retired.
Her name was Amanda Blake. And she was on Gunsmoke for 19 years, from 1955 to 1974. So there you go.
Yeah, she was on all those years that Chester was on. Chester was Matt Dillon's sidekick.
All right.
I got a story about him.
Oh, really? Go.
Yeah. Back in those days, we were in the upstairs part of the building at the airport. We were on the upper floor, the Weather Service was, and the control tower was on up on top of the building completely. And I had the max min thermometers, we had to go down to the instrument shelter on the edge of the airport every 6 hours and see what the high and low was, and then reset the thermometers. We had no other way to find out what the high and low was like you do these days. So I went down the back stairs one day on Sunday to go check that. And when I got down to the bottom floor, I saw Chester coming toward me, and he wasn't limping, but he was in his garb that he's on TV with. And he said, sir, can you tell me where the men's bathroom is? And I I led him to the men's bathroom and opened the door for him to get in, and I lived. And 1 year later, exactly, also on a Sunday afternoon, the star of another Western program that was always dressed in black, what was his name?
Paladin?
No. He was slim and always dressed in black, always had his gun on. And I went down that about that same time on a Sunday afternoon again to there, and there he came around the corner looking like he was lost, and I said, "You're looking for the men's bathroom." He said, "How did you know?" I said, "That's my job." I got in a lot of trouble.
Hey, Jim, you're doing that Cylon thing, JB. Bill, you might have to drop him and bring him back, because I'm afraid that noise is going to be a little too much. It's got a strange electronic noise around your voice, JB.
Off. You want me to turn my TV off?
Technically, I think if you unplug and plug the microphone back in, that often will help the Cylon. Yeah,
that's what they do on Leo's show. They always tell him right. To unplug and plug, but I don't think JB's mic is within... The plug might be easily reached from his destination right there. But again, yeah, if you're just joining us, we're talking with our own JB Elliott.
You want me to do that, James? Take him
out? Well, why don't you take him out and bring him back, and let's see if that fixes the problem. Because for those that are watching, about 95% of everybody, they listen to this show, and we didn't want JB's audio to be distorted. So Bill's going to take him off and bring him right back. But I've been poking around on Miss Kitty, and apparently she was big into she loved animals, and there is the Amanda Blake Memorial Wildlife Refuge in Harold, California, a refuge for emu, deer, and a herd of orcs. ORYX. I've never heard of that. But I don't see an orangutan listed here. We know now why she doesn't like the orangutan anymore. But we're going to talk with JB. And again, Bill, I'll turn this back over to you. But we wanted to get the Miss Kitty story out. But this guy has worked so many historic outbreaks, and we wanted him to have the whole show and have a chance to talk. JB, talk to us now.
Hang on, he's muted.
All right.
We'll get unmuted here.
We'll be sure that his audio sounds clean.
I just...
Come on. I almost had it.
You're good.
Now he's unmuted.
All right, JB, say something for us. There we go. Now, your audio sounds clean as a whistle. So, Bill, go ahead. The interview belongs back to you.
Now, JB, you know, James was just talking about you being a part of these really big outbreaks. Talk about May 27th, 1973, which was a big day in Alabama.
May 27th, 1973, out on the west side of Birmingham, right?
Yeah, this was Center Point and also the Centerville tornado, the tornado that hit the radar.
Yeah. Yeah, I was working that Sunday and late that Sunday night. In fact, I think I worked all night that Sunday night. But that tornado first formed south of Demopolis, and a state trooper spotted it down there and called the Demopolis state troopers. They in turn called us. And of course, we advised Centerville radar, but they've already seen it on the radar. It came right up the highway between Greensboro and the radar site and on up to just south of Birmingham. And it literally uprooted millions of trees in the Bankhead National Forest, which it had to go all the way through. And it struck the southeast side of Greensboro. And I believe about two people were killed there, and it destroyed a schoolhouse, I think it was. And it came right on up the highway toward Centerville and Brent. And when it came over that ridge southwest of Brent, where the U.S. Weather Bureau EF3 was, it was just a rated 3 radar was, and it completely destroyed the radar and heavily damaged the building. And Dale Black was the NRC there at the time, and he and two other guys sort of hunkered down in the radar room, and they were not injured, but flying glass went everywhere.
And
then The one that wasn't the one that hit center point that same night. Of course, that one went up and got the Brent Baptist Church and destroyed it. But wasn't the one that went through center point later that evening a separate one?
Yeah, Debbie, and that's an interesting tornado because it's the first time I ever saw one. Yeah. And, you know, of course, by that time, you know, it was only about a mile from our house. And I'll never forget my mom coming to the door and saying, come inside. We were outside playing. And so when she showed me that tornado, I thought that I was going to pass out. But less than a year later, JB, you were around on April 3rd, 1974, which is a red letter day in Alabama and U.S. weather history. Why don't you tell us something you remember about that? And then we want to hear that famous radar story.
Okay. By the way, on that Center Point tornado, I have a graphic picture of a large home, a real nice home, that was picked up and turned upside down and deposited right back on its foundation. Okay. The super outbreak.
Hey, JB, can you set up the super outbreak a little bit? I mean, today we've got, you know, you got to be living under a rock if you don't know a big outbreak is coming, right? But back then, what was it like a day or two before? Did you, I mean, obviously we didn't have the technology that we do now, but what was the sense of, is something big coming or was there not? Does that make sense?
Yeah, we didn't get scared. Al Pearson was head of the, what is now the Storm Prediction Center. They were in Kansas City at that time. And he was a real good friend of Bob Feria, our MIC. And he took it on himself to call all southern region radar stations 2 days before and said, if you got any maintenance you need to do on your radars, get it done quickly. This is going to be a historic outbreak. And, of course, it was. The only thing is, I did not get that message. They never told me it was going to be historic until I was right in the middle of the battle that night, and I said, boy, this is historic. But the word wasn't passed down to me because I didn't come on duty until about mid-afternoon, and already there was a tornado threatening western Jefferson County at that time. But the big event came that night. And we had telephone recordings back in those days to where we kept the forecast on there and changed it often as we needed to and would put information on there about severe thunderstorms and tornadoes. And so many of those thunderstorms got scarce about that time. And then I went back there and re-recorded that telephone thing. And I said, thunderstorms are exploding tonight, and almost all of them are severe. So don't wait till you hear a warning. If you hear thunder, even off at the distance, go ahead and go to your storm cellar, because these are very severe. And there were numerous tornadoes, of course. And as it turned out, it hit Jasper and went on up and literally destroyed the city of Guin. And I got on the telephone trying to call the sheriff's office up in the Tennessee Valley to see how bad it was up there. And a female lady woman answered it. And she says, this is not the sheriff's office. But she says, I says, well, I'm with the Weather Bureau. I was trying to get some information. She said, well, tell me what's going to happen. And I told her. And she says, you can call me anytime. I like your southern voice.
JB and the ladies.
Yeah.
So later that night, you had a run-in with a lady, didn't you, JB?
Yeah. I was working midnight shift, but I got called in at 5 p.m., so I worked from 5 p.m. until 10 the next morning. And after the tornadoes died down a little bit, real late at night, I had extra duties I had to do. I had to gather all of the river data and code it up and send it by teletype to the New Orleans River Center in or the Atlanta River Center. Those changed while I was doing it. And so I was sitting there at my desk, dead tired, real sleepy. I got up and went back to the ready room and got me Buffalo Rock and Moon Pie and came back to my desk and started doing my work. About that time, in fact, we had to leave the phone on all night. About that time, the phone rang, and I answered it, and she said, sir, I said, yes, ma'am. She said, do you mind taking a few minutes out and let me read some Bible scriptures to you and say a prayer for you? You guys up there in Birmingham are scaring the whole state to death, and I'm scared to death. I won't even go to bed. And I said, don't go to bed. I'm not going to bed. And so she went on for about 5 minutes, and then she said, when you guys get to heaven, if you get to heaven, God is going to deal harshly with you. Wow. So I didn't know what to say. So I said, lady, if you don't get off of this phone immediately, I'm going over to my super powerful radar and reroute the strongest storm right across your house. And she said, oh, my God, click.
And now, JV, about 2 years later, we get Weather Radio, and you really revolutionized that. And then in April of 1977, an F5 tornado hit western Birmingham. And I think you were on duty that day. And do you remember your use of Weather Radio that afternoon with Mr. Shelley? How did you approach it?
We went live.
Oh, lost him.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Yep. I'll get him back.
He faded away. I tell you what, while you're doing that, let's take a break. We're going to run Professor Peters, and we'll talk about ongoing weather. We'll come back and finish the interview with JB, because he did play a big role in the early days of NOAA Weather Radio. His work was a shining example. And one thing about JB a lot of people don't know, he's my mentor. Without him, I wouldn't be here. Good or bad, whatever. Blame me on him, all right?
And you got it recorded this week in weather history, believe it or not, Jay.
Oh, do it really? Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Now that JB's back, you go ahead and do this last question, and then we'll do the recorded stuff after he talks about weather radio. Then we'll come back and finish it later.
Okay. JB, talk about you and Mr. Shelley on that April 4th, 1977. Oh, he's muted. Sorry.
And it so happened that Dr. Fujito and four of his students were in a plane flying way up in the sky, flying northeast from Jasper, and they were following the Parrot thunderstorm that produced that tornado. And they said it was up to over 60,000 feet. But we did not know that. They did not radio us and tell us that, but we found out about it the next day when he came out to the office to review the situation about that tornado.
And JB, you got a special commendation for that day, didn't you?
Yeah, I got two real nice commendations over the years. One of them was a bronze medal from the Department of Commerce, and the other one was a silver medal. I had to go to Washington to get the silver medal and meet the head of the chief of the U.S. Weather Bureau and the chief of the Department of Commerce, I believe it was then. And so there were several people who got nice things, but I was sure glad to get that.
Yeah, but while you were a trendsetter, JB, doing weather radio in Alabama, everybody in the Weather Service didn't think this live broadcasting and the extent you took it to was actually a good thing, did they?
No, but Robert M. Ferry, IMIC at the time, was just elated that I did that. And my immediate supervisor, who never did do any work.
That's the way all bosses are.
And he was
let's name any names.
I'm not. I just want to tell you, he was the ugliest guy I've ever seen.
Show title.
Anyway, he came to me after the thing was over, and he says, I don't like the way you're doing things. You're setting a bad precedent for the rest of us, and the rest of us may not want to do the same things you're doing. But I had started a big scrapbook on all severe weather and had a huge scrapbook, and when they moved the office to Shelby County, they threw it in the garbage.
Oh.
No.
But anyway, what was your question, Bill?
Yeah, just talking about the fact that other people in the Weather Service didn't see eye to eye with some of the cool things you were doing, but you were really setting the trend, JB, and became quite a folk hero in Central Alabama, and one of the most recognized voices in the media, even though you weren't on public media, you were on the weather radio.
Yeah, I didn't know I was becoming popular like that. But the day after I retired, I got a letter from a couple in Anniston, an Everly couple, and they said, "What in the world are we going to do? You're gone." Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a weird weather radio story about JB. So I was at the Weather Service office in Birmingham one day, and it was spotter training, and there were a lot of ham radio guys up there, and JB was working the shift. This was like a Saturday, and he kind of waved me back into the weather radio room, and I thought he wanted to show me something. And back in those days, it was mostly recorded carts, these audio cart machines that don't exist anymore. But he sat me down, he turned off that recorded cart machine thing, and he interviewed me live on how many people on the planet have ever been interviewed live on weather radio? JB, do you remember that?
Yeah, you went out nationwide all over Alabama because we had three different transmitters, and I even asked you what your name was.
He did.
That's a good show title too. Nationwide all over Alabama.
And he even had me record some IDs. So I was like the top of the hour ID guy for weather radio. And this is National Weather Service Radio, KIH 54 in Birmingham.
So Mike Royer never got to do that, did he, Jay?
So on that note, guys, we're going to pause. And JB, we're not through with you. We got a lot more questions, but we're going to pause for Professor Peters and Weather Brains 101. We've got This Week in Weather History. We're going to come back and talk about very active weather across the country. We've got the email inbox. We've got the picks of the week, the fog bank, and much more as Weather Brains rolls along.
Weather Brains 101 with Professor Peters.
Well, I've lost track of how many episodes I've done on dual polarization radar. I think this is the sixth one, and perhaps one of the most interesting new products available from a radar site with dual polarization. The HCA product, which stands for Hydrometeor Classification Algorithm, is a computer algorithm that looks at a variety of standard and dual polarization products. Then, using fuzzy math techniques, the algorithm determines the most likely classification type for each radar return. Now, keep in mind that this is a derived product, a computer algorithm, so it will be subject to error, and sometimes significant error. There are 11 classification types possible. These are biological, clutter, ice crystals, wet snow, dry snow, rain, heavy rain, big drops, grapple, hail mixed with rain, that's one, and unknown. While this sounds like a very useful product, it must be used cautiously, only after looking at other standard and dual polarization products. Since it is an algorithm, it is subject to error. It gives no indication on uncertainty of the given classification, and probably most important of all, does not serve as a surface-based precipitation type product. For example, on a 90-degree summer day with a strong thunderstorm situation, and if the radar is sampling an area above the freezing level, even in the middle of a severe thunderstorm, it will classify it as a winter precipitation type. Now, in our next episode, we're going to explore the applications for these products in various weather situations.
Opening the musty, dusty, leather-bound weather history books in the Weather Brains office this week, we find an entry from right here in the home state of the great James Spann. On February 13th, 1899, one of the coldest air masses ever observed in the United States made it all the way to the Gulf Coast. It was 7 degrees above zero in New Orleans and Pensacola that morning. Mobile dropped to a mind-numbing -1. The reading of -2 at Tallahassee still stands as the state's coldest reading ever, and many all-time state record lows were being observed throughout the cold wave over the United States. Now, in Birmingham, observations were taken at the old Fountain Heights Weather Office. According to our very own JB, records were kept in a beat-up old journal. The official low on this frigid morning was -10 Fahrenheit at the weather office. Handwritten notes on the journal for the date indicated that the temperature in outlying areas around the city was -14. If the reading had been taken at the current observation post at the Birmingham airport, it surely would have read minus 14. If readings had been kept in Pinson back then, which is normally the coldest in the Birmingham area, it is safe to bet that the reading there would have been minus 17. Now, some other Birmingham and Alabama lows that morning included minus 7 in Tuscaloosa, Elba, and Opelika, minus 5 in Greensboro, minus 11 in Florence, minus 12 in Decatur, minus 15 in Oneonta, minus 16 in Hamilton and Scottsboro, and minus 18 in Valley Head. Greensboro had 5 inches of snow on the ground that morning. Now, a major blizzard was spreading a wide swath of snow from Florida to Maine. Snow flurries were reported as far south as Fort Myers, Florida. The blizzard, dubbed the Storm King, dumped nearly 16 inches of snow in New York City on top of an 11-inch snow cover that was already in place. 20 inches of snow fell at Washington, D.C., 34 inches in Cape May, New Jersey. The pressure in the center of the storm is estimated at 966 millibars, as strong as a major hurricane. Now, many cold records fell during the cold wave. Some included the all-time record of minus 8 at Dallas, minus 16 at Amarillo, 23 below at Tulia, Texas is the coldest ever in the Lone Star State, minus 13 is an all-time record at Little Rock, minus 22 at Kansas City, and minus 15 at Washington, D.C. And that's a look back at some cold weather in the Deep South and the entire country, for that matter, taken directly from the pages of This Week in Weather History. Follow my daily weather history tweets on Twitter. I am WXHistorian at Twitter.com.
Very nice, Bill. And this is a time we go and do a weather roundup. And before JB gets into this, I just wanted to say for those that are watching what's up on the screen now, that is a radar look at the tornado that hit Hattiesburg, Mississippi the day before this show was recorded. This happened on the 10th of February, and the radar images are pretty remarkable. You've got the Weather Service in Jackson. They have up on the screen, they've got storm relative velocity, reflectivity. They've got differential reflectivity and the correlation coefficient product off the new duopole processing. And just fascinating. It's a tornado that you can't miss, really.
Although not the classic hook of something that looked that big on the reflectivity.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That is true. And Nate looks like he got some radar pictures, too, there.
Yeah, this was actually posted on Facebook and Twitter by Ari Sarsalari out of Huntsville. So shout out to him for that. But one of the things I like that he did here was he took the cross section of the radar data in that bottom panel. This is the correlation coefficient data. And you can see the encircled there in the black. All the red areas outside of that are areas where you've got high correlation, which means the radar, when it looks in that where it's looking, it sees things are all roughly the same shape, the same orientation. But in the areas where you get into the greens, the yellows, and down into the blues, you're seeing a mixture of things. And the way I describe that is the difference between canned peas and mixed vegetables. Canned peas are going to show up as red. They're all the same thing, same shape, but mixed vegetables, the whole thing. And when you see that, along with the velocity signature and the high reflectivity, that is a dead giveaway that you've got some debris, some tornado debris being kicked up there. And you can really see, one of the things I like about the cross section is you can see some of that debris getting kicked up almost to 20,000 feet with the heaviest and highest amount of that debris going up more than 2 miles above ground level. It's a pretty, I mean, we were watching that yesterday afternoon, looking at the radar data and on Twitter, and that just, like you said, that's one you can't miss. If you know, you're looking at radar data and you don't see that one, you probably need to find another line of work.
Right. And you know, for so many years, people, I think, have heard the term TVS or tornado vortex signature. On that correlation coefficient product, that is a TDS, a tornado debris signature. And again, that's an example of how the dual pole works. But that was rated an EF4 by the Weather Service in Jackson. They had a survey team there today. And I just think that the fact that nobody was killed is remarkable.
That's, That's a real testament to the folks paying attention, the local media. I could go on my rant about the Weather Channel going in a commercial break with live video.
Go ahead.
If the Weather Channel punted on commercials for every tornado, even every confirmed tornado, in a warning, they'd go out of business. I get that. I mean, they exist to make money. Part of that is, you know, they need to serve their stockholders, and I get that. At the same time, and I knew this from trying to watch the streams, they were the local stations were doing their level best to try and stay on the air. But they were having problems staying on the air. The tornado and the power surges and everything were taking out their equipment. Their live stream went out, and they mentioned a couple of times how their on-air signal had been taken out and come back. And, you know, I don't know that most people – and the Weather Channel folks, I think, would tell you this. You know, they don't want you looking at the Weather Channel if it's heading straight for your house. Correct me if I'm wrong, and if anybody from the Weather Channel wants to correct me, they want national audiences, but they don't necessarily think that local folks should tune to them. They really want people to watch the locals. Having said that, in a situation like that, you've got a clearly dangerous tornado on the ground. You had John Sibley, who is a storm chaser, with video streaming live to the internet. They wound up using some of his video. They interviewed him. So we knew this was happening. We knew it was heading into a populated area. And right at the height of it, and we're going to go to your local on the 8s in a commercial break. And I really have a hard time wrapping my head around that, especially given that the locals were having issues staying on. And, I don't know what the workflow is like on a Sunday afternoon at the Weather Channel on a day where you were expecting. I mean, Dr. Greg Forbes was there, so you had some expectation that there was going to be some severe weather. But having said that, I don't know what the workflow is. I'd like to think that they had somebody monitoring the local stations to see, if I ran a large national cable weather outlet, I would watch the locals if they're available on a live stream, stuff like that. So they had every possibility to know that the locals were having problems staying on the air. And maybe you just say, you know, we're going to punt a couple of commercial breaks just to make sure the folks in Hattiesburg know what's going on. It doesn't help their stock, by the way, that in less than a week's time, they have mislabeled some part of Mississippi geography. Last week, they labeled Minnesota with the abbreviation for the state of Mississippi. And then today, they had, I think it was Mike Bettis, on the ground in Hattiesburg, and they supered him Johannesburg, which last I checked was in another continent. You know, again, small, simple things, but you add it all up, and it just doesn't look very good. And then this comes on the heels of the whole storm naming thing from last week. And, a lot of folks, on one hand, clearly the name got some traction. On the other hand, it took a beating in a lot of places. A lot of folks writing articles, questioning it, back and forth. So,
Let's hire Bill Nye, the science guy.
Yeah. Wow. Let's talk about the name thing real quick now. You know, we had this big blizzard up in the Northeast, and they had up to 40 inches of snow in spots. It was a big one. It was maybe not record-breaking, but it was a big one, maybe comparable to the 1978 blizzard up there. So the Weather Channel name, and as we talk about the Weather Channel, let me just say this. I think we all have good friends that work there. I do,
yes. And
I think everybody on this show does, and this is not being critical of those people.
And I think for the most part, the folks at the Weather Channel do their level best to put on a good product. I think they deserve a lot of credit over the last, say, year to year and a half for really amping up the meteorological content of, after the, I guess it's the St. Louis tornado that they were in a movie. They took a beating on that. And ever since then, you've seen a lot more actual weather. They're delving into models and uncertainty and showing stuff on television that, really very few people were showing as of 5 or 10 years ago. And they're showing it with aplomb, and I think that's great. Just wish there's more of it.
We're being critical of some of their policies, and these people don't have anything to do with that in most cases. Mm-hmm. And naming the storm, to their credit, Brian Norcross came on this show. Mm-hmm. Remember back when they announced they were going to name winter storms, and Brian came on the show, very kind to do that, knowing that there'd probably be some agitation here. But let's go down, look down there at that. For those watching down there in those bottom windows, we have all these big brains on this show. I'm going to go down the everybody down here, and I want you to tell me, is naming winter storms a good thing? Now that we've been through this through Nemo, which is what they call the New England blizzard. So
and Orca, we've gone one past that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Not Okra. Which somebody mistook it for, but Orca.
Oprah?
Okra.
I'm just going to go down in order, starting down here on the left. Bill Murray, naming winter storms, good or bad?
Yeah, James, I have to say, I think it's from the beginning, I thought it was a bad idea, although I did see it picking up some, you know, traction in the social media channels. So I began to think that that might be the one silver lining to the cloud, is that, you know, it did seem to be easy to, you know, pick up information on Twitter and things from people that were using the Nemo hashtag. But I thought Nemo was a Disney movie, so, or something like that. But anyway.
All right. So Brian Peters, naming winter storms good or bad?
Ugly. And you know, it's kind of interesting, James. I never even heard the use of the term Nemo. So it's not getting much play.
You kidding? I couldn't get away from it.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a Russian ruler?
I think
now
so.
You're thinking Nero.
Yeah.
So JB, naming winter storms by the Weather Channel, good or bad?
Let me put it this way. In the first days that I saw it, I didn't like it. About a week later, I began to like it fairly well. And as of yesterday and today, I literally hate it. And
So what's your biggest beef about it?
The names are strange. They're not even American names. I'd rather for them to name them James and Bill and stuff like that.
Hey, so if you could name them, you'd pick American names. All right, Kevin, good or bad?
I think it's actually okay in and of itself. What I'm the most disappointed in is that it was a marketing stunt, and regardless of the reasons, you know, I think... Brian Norcross kind of alluded to the idea that, well, we really wanted to do this, and if we'd gone through the Weather Service, it never would have gotten done. And I'm sure there's a certain amount of truth to that. A lot of people would have wanted to weigh in. But I think that it's unfortunate that they are creating some confusion by not doing it as a group effort. I think it's probably not a bad idea. People had done it before them, but I think that they've created a lot of confusion in going out on their own, and I think that that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah,
when can we get Cantori on Weather Brains?
Whenever you'd like, when he's not busy, JB.
If you want him on, we'll get him on the show, JB.
The problem is they're all going to have to toe the company line. And, you know, a small group of them will sit at the end of the season, if they haven't done so already, and they say, hey, look. And some of those are going to be marketing people and Comcast people. And they're going to say, hey, we got a lot of press on that. I couldn't get away from it over the weekend. Now, that will die over time. It won't be as much. You know, it's the first year they did it and so on and so forth. But you can't help, from a pure marketing standpoint, acknowledge that they got a lot of buzz about it. And just because I'm paying more closer attention, I guess, but I have to admit, I was on the air this evening, in the back of my head, I was showing a national radar picture, and I almost said Nemo and saying the storm that came through the other day because it was on my brain. The blog
just to watch blood come out of James's ears over there.
I wish that they would have been more, you know, group oriented.
But all right, Nate Johnson, good or bad?
If you're the Weather Channel, it's great.
Yeah.
Yep. But I agree with Kevin. I think that, and I said this when Norcross was on, I think the manner about which they went about doing this was all wrong. And, you know, that's not how, as a partner, you work with other partners. You don't paint them into a corner. I in the blog post that I wrote on Digital Meteorologist when this was announced, I said that this is, they could very well dictate the conversation because of their size and their reach. And I give them that. But that's not, in a partnership, that's not how you do that. You don't paint your other partners into a corner and force them to react like that. You work alongside to, you know, pull a policy together that works for everybody. You know, and then all of the huffing and puffing about, oh, it's for awareness and public communication and blah, 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 blah. No, it's not. It's a marketing stunt. Nothing wrong with that. Just call spade a spade. You want to drive the conversation. You want to track your social media. Fine. Let's just do that and go with it. If it's for the public good, then let's work together as a weather enterprise with the AMS and the NWA and the Weather Service and universities, and let's find a way to make that come together in a not-so-profit ratings marketing-oriented way.
And one other point related to Nate's, I think that is important, is by doing it on their own the way they have and getting so much buzz about it and then picking a name like Nemo – to a certain segment of the population, they made a joke out of it.
Yes.
And
yes.
That, I think, is highly detrimental, and I hope it was an unintended consequence on the part of the Weather Channel.
Exactly.
But I think I don't know that. By making a joke out of it, I think that you minimize the seriousness of a storm like that one.
And here's the situation with this storm. I think there were, how many deaths? 12 that we know of, directly attributed to that. And you've got this thing named after some, you know, Disney cartoon. And that really, that drives a burr up my boo-hunkus. I mean, they're making fun of a situation where you know, people died. And it's not funny. It shouldn't be a cartoon character. It shouldn't be, you know, anything funny. This is serious business, and if you want to name these things to you know, make people understand they're coming and to bring in name recognition and all that, pick some serious names and work with the Weather Enterprise, work with the private sector and the government and everybody else. But so,
but I reject that. I reject out of hand the notion that Norcross, he's been quoted in a couple of articles where he said these winter storms just need a hashtag. Well, maybe they do. But they've never needed anyone to give them to them. I think Twitter's pretty good at making that happen on their own. I mean, we had Snowmageddon and Snowpocalypse and SnowMG and everything else. We didn't have a problem coming up with names before Atlanta got involved. And now that we, you know, I remember at the beginning of this, they were expecting to name 10 to 12. By all rights, this has been a mild winter nationwide, and we're already to the O storm, and we're getting ready to have probably P, Q, R, and S here in the next, you know, couple of weeks as this next series of storms comes across the country. So we're already exceeding that, and not in a year where we've really had a lot of really bad winter weather in the traditional sense. So, you know, again, the lack of standards and openness also bugs me to no end, is that you have a commercial entity with a profit and ratings motive determining in smoke-filled rooms what constitutes a winter storm and what doesn't, based on standards that only they know. And if you can't look at that as an objective observer and see that that is not good for anybody except the people in the smoke-filled rooms, you know, you need to get out of the business.
Yep, I hear you. All right, well, we got to move on here. And by the way, the episode where Brian Norcross came on was Weatherbrain's 350. We did that
and
October.
And it's a must listen. It was right. It was really good.
And we had Bob Ryan on the show, who's a weather legend. Bob, and he works for my company, but he's in Washington at Channel 7. He worked for WRC for a long time. He was the original Today Show guy. He's a meteorologist, a great guy. But it's Weatherbrain's 350 was the one where we talked about naming winter storms. But anyway, We've talked way too long. JB, any other quick notes about what's happening nationally before we move on here?
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you a question. You mentioned your bohunkus a while ago. What is that?
That'll be on episode number 763, so we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Speaking of hot weather, did you guys see that 96 yesterday afternoon at McAllen, Texas?
I do the weather in McAllen, yes.
Yeah, okay. You missed the forecast then, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did. I botched it, man. I think I had a high of like 89, so what's 7 degrees, you know?
Yeah. You guys are not going to believe this, and I'm not trying to claim credit for anything, but by dark yesterday, I had determined that the Hattiesburg tornado was an EF4.
All right. You called it before Alan Girard. Good deal.
Alan Girard is a real expert. My good friend over there is retiring from Jackson. Okay, the extremes today was 26 below this morning in Jellystone Park. 86 at Edinburgh, Texas was the high this afternoon. And I mentioned that 96 yesterday in South Texas. And one of the other things that we come up with the night of the Alberta Clipper was the Bismarck Bite. And I'm not going to go into that because it's silly. And I'm not silly anymore. Okay.
Oh, yeah, so, right.
Some significant rain in the 24 hours, 3.41 inches at Montgomery, 2.59 in Macon, 1.70 in Atlanta, and 1.26 in Baton Rouge. By the way, I see where the Crimson Tide is already predicted to be number one next season. I didn't know that till today. 40 inches of snow accumulated at a small town in southwest Connecticut. And I believe that is the most official snow depth in this whole blizzard thing. Now, drifts, of course, were a whole lot deeper. And there were, I believe there are 16 fatalities now, including several in Canada. And let's see. Al Gore, I don't want to talk about him. Severe clear. We'll discuss that later. And that's about it. I don't have a good summary, but I do notice I have a certain map that the University of Minnesota, I believe, puts out that shows you every county in the nation, if they have any kind of winter weather advisory, and they have a color code on that. And I noticed this afternoon that it had decreased in the number of watches of warnings across the country, so it's letting up a little bit. And I noticed on radar this afternoon that all of the snow is just about gone out of the Northeast, but some more was reappearing in Maine. I wish we could get a report from Todd Fosey, our friend at the Weather Service at Caribou. Maybe we can get a hold of him tomorrow. I'll try to send him an email. I'm anxious to know how he turned out. And I think that's just about all I got. I don't have a good, thorough national summary. I'm so sorry.
Well, it was an excellent, excellent report, JB. And looking at the clock, it's time to open up that magical email inbox.
Letters. We get letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters.
So we had a boatload of email over the last couple of weeks. We chewed through that. I'm glad we did, but that didn't leave us a whole lot for this week. I guess my live presence is what it takes to beg people to send us good email. But anyway, good stuff. And appreciate to all of the emails. We have a listener survey response from Daryl in Northport. We appreciate that you're listening to the program. We have an email from Wallace Williams, friend of the show, and a couple of things, a link to Coco Ross and a link to some new rain and snow reports that they've got on the page there. Our friend from Estonia, Tarmo Tanelsu, I butcher his name every time, but
It's hard to say, isn't it?
I know, it is, but he's a forgiving soul.
Everybody mocked me when I couldn't say it, and now...
It's good. We appreciated the couple audio clips, and I think he emails us enough, and he's got good enough recording equipment. He could just record his emails and shoot them on, and we just play them straight.
And say his own name.
Yeah, exactly. So that and not because I don't want to learn it, I do, but I need to hear it more. He's better at it than I am. Anyway, he says he's sad to hear about the tornado, but glad that nobody was killed out of that. And he's now sending cousins in central Estonia. He's aware of the possibility of thunderstorms. James Spann is in the dream talking about thunderstorms with him. And then he's having to say, James having to tell people to get into their safe place and all that kind of stuff. He says, but we stay, looking at level data and polygons in Estonia on my phone. Indeed, I see I am under a severe thunderstorm warning, something that they don't have there. Okay, it's a severe thunderstorm warning, but we stay in the bunker. My thought is like, quote, James is sure going to like that. His underwear must be flapping. So anyway, they have a tornado warning, and then it transitions from that dream into something else. It says it's a tornado, or his thunderstorm withdrawals are getting pretty bad. So hopefully you'll have some thunder and lightning over there, but none of that tornado stuff. God knows we don't want to have James's underwear flapping. That's not good for anyone. And final email tonight from CJ Postal. We appreciate the email. And CJ writes, one, that we ought to do the All JB show. CJ, I hope you're listening tonight, because we did. And your email on it. But talking about the email interview we had with Jeff a couple weeks ago, talking about newspaper companies getting into meteorologists, it looks like it's happened there in Michigan. They have a couple of local TV folks who have joined forces with one of the local newspaper companies and suggest a guest there. I give a plug to somebody local here in the Raleigh area, Nikki Morak, who's now doing a blog for the News and Observer. I could get in trouble for plugging my television station's competition, but She's a good friend, so I'll mention that. And so if you know, if you have any guest suggestions, you want to tell us how you think we're doing, or anything else, shoot us a note, email at weatherbrains.com. That goes to all of us. We'll get it. If you have a pic or a link or something you want to share with us, you can send that as well. And if you'd like to do the old listener survey thing, check out the webpage, weatherbrains.com, and check out, look for the girl that looks like she's having way too much fun listening to the program. Click on her and it'll take you straight there. And that's it for this week's email inbox.
We interrupt this program for a CBS Radio Net Alert Bulletin.
So this just broke from the USGS, a magnitude 5.1 earthquake in North Korea. But it's an artificial earthquake.
Yes.
You know what that means?
Uh-oh.
They tested a nuke.
They did the nuke thing.
Breaking news.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Not necessarily a good thing. All right, let's do the fog bank, and then we'll come around with our picks of the week.
Hello, Weather Brains listeners. This is David Phillips, Skydiver on Twitter. Welcome to the fog bank. My first pick for this week is an article about a study using the attenuation of cell phone signal between towers to measure rainfall. My second pick comes from the chief hydrometeorologist from the UK Met Office, writing about flood forecasting. The Capital Weather Gang has a Facebook post about a litter of dogs going to be used as service dogs for our veterans. All of the dogs have weather names, including Derecho. My fourth pick is the Earth Science Picture of the Day with a lightning strike photo. Finally, the NASA.gov website multimedia section had a GOES 13 image of the February 9th nor'easter. I think you'll like it a lot. Thanks for listening. Skydiver out.
All right. Thanks, Skydiver. And my pick of the week, it is the Jackson, Mississippi storm survey on the EF4 tornado that came through Hattiesburg, Mississippi yesterday. Excellent photographs, radar images, much more. I love a good storm survey. Brian Peters, you used to do storm surveys, and yours were excellent. So
I always enjoy a good storm survey, and I think I did some good ones in the past.
You did. Yours were fantastic. So what's your pick of the week this week?
Well, I got a nice note. I asked our friend up in New York City, John Huntington, for some help on something, and he sent me a link to his Control Geek blog where he did a snowstorm time lapse. And it's kind of neat because his camera was apparently down low and the snow drifted to the glass. But it's still a great link. So I'll put it up there. It's got all these numbers and everything. So.
All right, cool. All right, and again, all these links are up on the website, weatherbrains.com. JB Elliott, do you, sir, have a pick of the week?
I'm anxiously awaiting the foghorn, sir.
All right, Kevin Selly, what's your pick?
I'll have two. I'll have a visual one, similar to Brian's. It's something I saw go by on Google+. Is a time lapse from the northeastern blizzard. It's really nice. Take note that in the foreground is the snow piling up on a table. But the guy who posted is actually somebody that I saw. It was a repost from somebody at Google. He took note that it's fun to kind of watch at the beginning of it the weight of the snow start to sink the trees and the branches behind that thing. So it's kind of a fun video to watch.
Seen that before.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. The audio one, James, do you have that audio I sent over? This goes back to the Nemo conversation. This is from Leo Laporte this week.
You know, I was invited to that.
Oh, go ahead.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
You know, I was invited to that, but then Microsoft wound up canceling an event that they were going to have for their MVPs there because of
Nemo.
Nemo.
Yeah.
And Nemo, so the Surface RT launch and then Sandy, the Surface Pro launch and then Nemo.
Oh my God.
So I'd say if...
See, that's Leo and Ed Bott doing the This Week in Tech show. But I think that it's evidence, it's interesting that Brian said he didn't hear it. But I think that it's evidence that it got into the popular culture because those guys are tech geeks. They're not weather geeks. Yeah. And I think if you're keeping score, that's Weather Channel 1 and Weather Brains 0.
Zero. Yep. All right. All right. So let's go to Nate Johnson for his pick of the week.
You might be from Alabama if you see this man start rolling up his sleeves, a picture of James spanning, and you think A, center room, lowest floor of the house, B, bread, milk, batteries, C, stuff's about to get real, or D, all of the above. Thank you to WX Mike D on Twitter for sharing that pick of the week. That's good stuff.
I wonder who comes up with this stuff.
James, I expect this to be your Twitter avatar for the end of the night.
All right. That's awesome. All right, Bill Murray, what's your pick of the week?
Yeah, I'm gonna use the one that Nate lent me there. That's in the chat. That's Cliff Mass, our friend from out west in Washington, who has an excellent post on his great blog about the inferiority of the numerical weather prediction status in the United States.
And I got to give a shout out to Tony Rice, RTP Hokie, who has shared that, brought that to my attention.
And I've got a James fan story to tell, too. James, Sally wanted me to tell you about in her class today, you know, 25 kids. She had them all sing out what they wanted to be when they grew up. And one of the young men said that he wanted to be a weatherman. And she said, well, that's interesting because my husband works in the weather. And that didn't get anything, you know, any audience reaction. But when she said, you know, she wanted to take it another step, she said, he works with James Spann. Ta-da. And immediately 25 kids go, ooh.
Oh, please. No, see, those are my people. If they're between the ages of 5 and 11, they love me. The problem is 12 and up and under 5, they hate me. So,
well, they don't know who Bill Nye is, and they don't understand what a stooge is, so you're probably good for another 5 years.
Wow.
Oh, boy. All right.
We got some guests coming up, but I can't remember who they are. So we'll see them when they come by.
The last time you named off some very important people that are going to be on this show. I mean,
I know, but my Google calendar's not working right, so I can't remember. I know Chuck Doswell's in there somewhere.
Yes.
And you got Marshall Shepard, the new AMS president.
Oh, yeah, the AMS president. Yeah, he's coming up quick, except we moved all the dates, so there's no telling what's coming up.
Yeah, let me just say this now. We've got an issue because our youngest son plays high school baseball, and being the dad I am, the man that used to coach this boy, I'm going to try and attend all of his high school games, and they play 3 Monday nights. We're having to move 3 Monday nights, including a week from tonight. And I'm starting to think, Bill, we probably ought to do that show this Friday. I don't know if anybody can make it, but I'll throw out an email. We might do the next show this Friday. For most people, it doesn't matter because they listen later. But for those that are watching live, we'll probably do one on the 15th at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. That will be the one we normally do on the 18th. But anyway, we got some pretty cool guests coming up. So, JB,
maybe we could take February and March off.
Well, there you go. That is definitely an idea. We can just
we've been off for February and January and all the months before that. Yeah.
We're off every day.
These 2 months.
So what else
different?
Is new? Yeah.
So JB, we got about 60 seconds left. Any little stories that we omitted from your long career? What was the highlight of your career? The one thing that will always stand out in your mind?
It's Super Outbreak.
1974.
Tell us when you met James.
I met James 3 days after he came from Montgomery up to Birmingham to do TV weather. Our office was at 11 West Oxmoor Road, right down the highway from Channel, whatever it was he worked at. 6, wasn't it? 13.
13.
13. Yeah. When he'd get through with the 6 o'clock news, he came down there one day to get acquainted with us, and so he and I became real good friends because we immediately understood that we were interested in severe weather. But from then on, after the 6 o'clock news each night, he would call me up on the phone and say, I'm going to come down and visit with you guys and just sit around and talk. Do you want me to bring you anything from Hardee's?
We call them Hardee parties.
Hardee parties, yeah. I said, yes, bring all of page 4.
JB, that man would suck down so much food. It cleaned me out. You know, I wasn't making that much money back then. I spent $30 at the Hardee's drive-through window just for JB's food, you know. It was this man was an eating machine.
But, I gained 22 pounds.
I cherish those nights back in the old days. I was come to Birmingham. I was 23. This was in 1979. And at the time I worked, it was only about maybe 5 miles away from the Weather Service. And going down there between the newscasts, watching those guys work. And, man, they had those AFOS panels. Remember those things? Those big old blue you know, monsters. And, of course, you know, this little phone we have, it's got 100 times the computing power of all that. But it was some amazing stuff for then. But, again, JB, it's an honor to have you share some memories tonight. And glad we had a chance to debrief you, because we've been meaning to do this for a long time. But here's the problem.
We call the AFOS the Blue Goose.
The Blue Goose.
Yeah, it was, all of them were hooked together, and if one of them crashed, a chain reaction would occur. And we were sitting there on midnight shift one time, and Apalachicola crashed, and it crashed. It caused Birmingham to crash. Birmingham caused Atlanta to crash, and also Jackson, and also the stations in Texas. And there was a massive outage all the way out to Albuquerque because we weren't paying attention.
JB blew up the whole weather service, but hey, I've got to go do some television, but thanks a lot for taking the time to listen. We record Weather Brains typically Monday nights at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern. You can always watch it live.bigbrainsmedia.com. There's a chat room there. Our email address, it is email@weatherbrains.com. All the other stuff's up on the website, weatherbrains.com. So on behalf of the entire Weather Brains crew, I'm James Spann. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a great week, and God bless. That was best show ever, JB. The best guest ever, JB Elliott, the world's greatest weatherman.
I think you're really good.
All right, y'all. I'm Tardy. We got to go. Bye.